Weymouth, Portsmouth and New Haven. Nu var allt förberett för den stora invasionen. Järnvägarna reserverades för den militära trafiken. Det var inte lätt att veta vilken väg man skulle ta. Den jättelika kraftsamlingen var klar. Det skämtades om att nu hindrade bara spärrballongerna Storbritannien från att sjunka ner i havet. I slutet av maj låg anfallsstyrkorna i högsta beredskap. Då blev det en paus.
Fear feeds on delay, of course. And we didn't really know just when we were going.
Shot crap, played cards, lost all our money. Some people won money, I lost all mine. Didn't do me any good, I had no place to spend it when I got on the beach.
Upppackning och ompackning. Kontroll av utrustningen. Exakt datum för invasionen var ännu inte fastställt. De flesta av soldaterna kände fortfarande inte till vilken del av kusten de skulle anfalla. Bara officerare och underbefäl hade fått veta det. Normandikusten på andra sidan den 15 mil breda engelska kanalen hade delats upp i 5 invasionsstränder. Från väst till öst, Utah och Omaha. De skulle tas av amerikanerna. Gold, Juno och Sword som skulle tas av britterna och kanadensarna. Nu hängde allt på vädret.
On the evening of that Wednesday, the 31st of May, even then I advised General Eisenhower that conditions for the oncoming weekend, especially over Sunday night and Monday morning, the crucial times for overlord, were going to be stormy. But we went on with the meetings. I had to go before General Eisenhower and his commanders, who met for nothing else twice a day during those fateful days, 1st, 2nd and 3rd of June.
Den 3 juni började ilastningen, trots Eisenhowers oro för vädret. Soldaterna kände inte till några speciella problem. Å andra sidan trodde en del att det här bara var ännu en övning.
When we were first went aboard ship, we had no knowledge of the actual day. We had been aboard ship so many times, you see, that for about 6 months we were just constantly on and off ships.
I hamnarna på Englands kanalkust fortsatte den omfattande och komplicerade ilastningen. Men det allt sämre vädret ute till sjöss ställde Eisenhower inför en svår kris.
It was a time of dreadful tension. We all knew that there could be only one day's deferment. If there had to be another day, then all the landing craft would need to return to base so that it couldn't be done on a second day's postponement. It would have to be deferred for a whole fortnight until the next tides were right. And at that time, our charts were so black in the Atlantic that there didn't seem to be any prospect of getting this operation going at all.
We didn't know how long it was going to be postponed. Because the weather looked so bad, we wondered if it would ever clear up and whether the whole thing would be called off and we would be taken back off the ship.
Soldaterna var stridsberedda. Armadan var klar för avgång. Och så kom antiklimax.
We were then told that the invasion had been put back for at least 24 hours. Of course, this increased our apprehension, and we used to have these long conversations with each other about the kind of things that might happen, whether we'd ever get off the beach alive.
Rutinsysslorna fortsatte under ovisshet. Allt man kunde göra var att vänta.
Saturday crowd at the floor. Couldn't think without you. Don't set it won't work anymore.
Allt eftersom timmarna gick ökade känslan av att bara ett underverk kunde få igång operation Overlord.
Then mercifully, almost unbelievable happened about midday on that Sunday. We spotted that there might be an interlude between two depressions. By the evening, my own confidence in the forecast for this quieter period had so increased from further reports that had come in that I convinced General Eisenhower and his commanders that it would indeed arrive later on Monday after the storm of Sunday night and Monday morning. It would indeed arrive late on Monday, continue through Tuesday and probably into Wednesday. The next morning, early on the 5th of June, they met again to confirm this decision. And when I could tell them that we were even more confident than we had been the previous night that the fine or improved quieter interlude would indeed come along, the joy on the faces of the Supreme Commander and his commanders after the deep gloom of the preceding days was a marvel to behold.
I remember it very well. 4:15 a.m. on the morning of the 5th of June. I wasn't at the meeting, but I drove in there, and he came out, and he really looked so serious as he got in the car, and he said, D-Day is on. Nothing can stop us now.
Det var ett historiskt beslut. Ytterligare fördröjning kunde ha inneburit att operation Overlord överhuvudtaget inte hade kunnat genomföras.
The troop commander read a message from General Eisenhower, you know, Godspeed and all that sort of stuff.
We read this great message from Monty about good hunting in the fields of Europe and all this rubbish, and naturally being a soldier, we thought what a load of old cods it was.
Det var en imponerande styrka som styrde mot Frankrike. 6500 farkoster av olika slag eskorterade av allierade flottenheter. Glidflygplanen väntade med sina speciella D-dagsmarkeringar. Invasionen skulle inledas med luftlandsättningar i landstigningsområdets flanker. För de flygburna trupperna väntades förlusterna bli så höga som 70%, och det var Eisenhower väl medveten om.
They all had their blackened faces because they were going to jump Nazi-occupied Europe in a very short time. And you kept thinking, I wonder how many are going to come back. Later then, General Eisenhower, he said, you know, Kay, it is very hard to look a soldier in the face, knowing you might be sending him to his death.
Sent på kvällen den 5 juni gav sig de flygburna trupperna iväg.
Butterflies in your stomach and you're wondering what you're doing here. Why am I here? Why did I volunteer? Am I crazy? Everything is going through your mind and you're worried. You know it's coming up soon. I was afraid. I was 19 and I was afraid.
Många var rädda den natten. Det var ju Hitlers starka fästning Europa de skulle storma. På andra sidan väntade tyskarna, utan att veta när eller var anfallet skulle komma. D-dagen. De allierade styrde mot Normandis stränder. Efter 4 år var de på väg tillbaka.
It was a fantastic sight to see so many ships of all shapes and sizes and all going one way.
Quite a few boys wrote letters and gave it to friends so that they'd take them home or see that their parents got them. That was their farewell letter.
The sea was rough and it put their gas capes over them to keep dry, and it made them sick because they didn't get enough fresh air.
I had several men get seasick, and they upchucked, and they had to use their helmets to catch it in, and we threw them over the side, and they were washed out and given back to the men.
One felt absolutely dreadful physically, you know, and just wishing to God that the whole thing would be over, or at least that we could get onto dry land.
Halv sex på morgonen låg armadan utanför franska kusten. Efter massiva flyganfall följde en våldsam beskjutning från fartygen.
As far as your eye could see, you were surrounded with a craft of some sort, and it was just sending out shell after shell out of its turrets.
Tyskarna var fullkomligt överraskade och bedövade, men en del av batterierna hämtade sig snabbt.
It was far just more than sickness. Men loaded their pants and everything else. I had rarely seen that before. I know the men were sick, many of them were very sick.
This time the waves were pitching the craft up and down, I would say 6 or 7 feet.
A lot of boys got caught in the nets, but we had quite a time getting them loose. Their legs got caught in there.
Smoke. Heard a lot of shells coming over us. All smoke. Black smoke. Just like a volcano from afar, as one would see in the movies.
Landstigningen inleddes 6:30 av amerikanerna, 7:30 av britterna och kanadensarna. Efter all väntan, utbildning och övning hade ögonblicket kommit. Nu var det allvar.
We were the first attacker. We were the initial wave. There's always great losses in an initial wave. So each of us had been given at least 30 minutes to live on the beach.
I skydd av det allierade flyget som hade totalt luftherravälde rullade de första anfallsvågorna mot de 5 invasionsstränderna.
The soldiers were so glad to get off the landing craft to escape the seasickness that they were just ready to go anywhere by that time.
För soldaterna i de 5 anfallande divisionerna bestod D-dagens första timmar av död, ångest, mod, felslagna planer, snabba improvisationer.
We expected a clear beach with an indication as to exactly how we should proceed. We were even told the military police would be there to greet us. It became quite obvious that the beach was in a considerable state of chaos. On the run, in craft ran into underwater obstacles and into mines. One of them went over a mine, and the front half of the craft with the personnel in it literally went straight up in the air. The sea was quite a different colour when that craft blew up.
Somliga enheter landsteg på fel ställe. En del mötte oväntat lätt motstånd och andra mejades ner så fort de kom upp på stranden. Amerikanerna fick det svårast.
I didn't think I would make it. You know, I didn't think there was any way that you could get across that beach and survive. I mean, you know, I really thought it was my last day.
The first man, there was a sergeant, raised up to see how far we had to go to reach land and fell back dead.
We had been told that the Air Force was going to come in with the heavy bombers and they were going to crater the beaches for us to give us a place to hide. And this did not take place.
It was bloody awful. Every time I got up, I thought that it was just pure terror that was making my knees buckle until I finally hit the shale and I realized that I had about 100 pounds of sand in those pockets. I remember distinctly taking my trench knife and pressing it in people's backs to see if they were alive. If they're alive, I'd kick them or say, let's go. Later on, it dawned on me after I checked two or three that some of them were alive, but they wouldn't turn around. Just absolute terror.
På de tre brittiska och kanadensiska stränderna varierade motståndet. På Gold kämpade en enhet mot en bunker i 8 timmar, medan en annan intog sin del av stranden på 40 minuter. På Juno led kanadensarna svåra förluster, men avancerade. På Sword var striderna blodiga, men korta. Många försvarare kom fram ur sina bunkrar för att kapitulera. Och i slutet av D-dagen lossnade det för amerikanerna på Utah. De hade tagit fångar, vunnit ett starkt fotfäste och avancerat 8 kilometer inåt land. Men på Omaha stötte amerikanerna på svårigheter. Svår sjögång, starka befästningar och nyligen anländ tysk fältdivision.
From where I was, it seemed a failure.
At that time, there were just so many people on the beach there that you could literally walk on the bodies one end or the other, either the dead or the wounded.
I saw people laying out there with their no head and some with arms blown off, and some of my friends were pretty sickening.
På Omaha hade det tagit hela dagen att under svåra förluster skapa 1,5 kilometer djupt brohuvud.
It was the most heart-rending experience that I ever had. I hope I never have another one like it. Look back and see the remains of a crack battalion strewn over the beach. The men floating in the water face up.
Perhaps it was better that we were green, because if I'd have known then what I know now, I'd probably got on that boat and went back to England.
Day of continuous thinking, thoughts of home, a day of prayer, and without a doubt the longest day of my life.
You feel that you're, well, you've accomplished something that that you didn't think you would probably end up being around after it was done.
I think we were proud in some way that we'd done it and that the army we'd been in for so long and with all sorts of experiences of how they could bungle things had actually managed this invasion.
Oh, we feel very happy, very happy. Ah, the best day of life, I think so. La plus grande joie, how do you say in English? The biggest joys in our life. And we admire those courageous soldiers. They came from so far away to liberate us. And we gave to them everything we could give them. Cider, also. Calvados, also. And our friendship. And it was very emotional. And we became free.
Vid midnatt hade 130 000 man stigit i land. Man hade fått fotfäste på alla fem stränderna. Förlusterna uppgick till 9 000 man. Dagen efter D-dagen började Mulberry-hamnarna sättas ihop. För att operation Overlord skulle lyckas gällde det att få fram förstärkningar snabbare än fienden. Och förstärkningarna vällde in. På den sjunde dagen efter D-dagen körde en strid ström av fordon inåt land. På vissa ställen var köerna över 2 mil långa. I det här kritiska skedet var de båda konstgjorda Mulberry-hamnarna, britternas i Arromanche och amerikanernas i Saint-Laurent, de enda tillgängliga hamnarna för de allierade. Under de 4 dagarna närmast före den 18 juni tog de per dygn i genomsnitt emot nära 35 000 soldater, 5 000 fordon, 25 000 ton förnödenheter. Av alla uppfinningar som gjordes inför Overlord var Mulberry en som verkligen fyllde sitt syfte. Bara Eisenhowers och brittiske kungens bestämda avrådan hade förmått Churchill att avstå från att besöka invasionsområdet på D-dagen. Men 2 dagar efter landstigningen var han där och inspekterade. Invasionsledningen var medveten om att man låg efter tidtabellen för Overlord och att det nu var dags för operationens andra fas, slaget om brohuvudet. Invasionsstyrkorna fick utkämpa bittra strider för att skapa utrymme för den uppladdning av soldater och materiel som pågick bakom dem. Framryckningen gick långsamt mot en fiende som nu hade återhämtat sig väl. Det typiskt västfranska landskapet med många trädungar och häckar runt åkrar och vägar var besvärligt för de allierade stridsvagnarna. Den 10 juni hade de allierade bara 3 tyska pansardivisioner mot sig. De övriga 7 tillgängliga hade det tyska överkommandot vägrat ställa till Rommels förfogande. Trots det gick den allierade framryckningen ytterst långsamt. Den 12 juni hade de 5 brohuvudena förenats och fått en sammanhängande bredd på 10 mil och ett djup på upp till 3 mil. Bayeux blev den första befriade franska staden och välkomnade de fria franska styrkornas ledare, general de Gaulle, som nu satte sin fot på fransk mark för första gången sedan 1940. Den 19 juni slog det oförutsägbara kanalvädret till igen. Ett 4 dygn långt oväder, det värsta i juni på över 40 år, var nära att förstöra Mulberry-hamnarna. Fartygen drev för ankar. Värdefull utrustning gick till botten. Mängden inkommande materiel minskade med 4/5. Det gjordes frenetiska ansträngningar för att reparera skadorna som hotade fortsättningen av invasionen. Och snart var trafiken igång igen. Operation Overlords underhåll fungerade. Ett viktigt anfallsmål var Cherbourg i den amerikanska sektorn. Stadens hamn skulle avlasta Mulberry-hamnarna. Den 19 juni hade amerikanerna skurit av halvön Cotentin och avancerade mot Cherbourg. Cherbourg var starkt befäst. Tyskarna hoppades kunna uppehålla de allierade genom starkt motstånd här. Den 21 juni stod amerikanerna vid stadens utkanter efter hårda strider. Den 26 juni kapitulerade garnisonen. Det återstod bara att rensa några bunkrar. Bland fångarna befann sig garnisonens kommandant. Erövringen av Chabour var den första större segern under invasionen. 25 000 fångar togs i och runt staden. Somliga fransyskor miste sina tyska fästmän. I frontlinjens östra flank låg staden Caen. Den var centrum för de tyska trupper som sattes in mot brohuvudet. Montgomery hade ryckt fram mot Caen sedan D-dagen. I början av juli kunde han äntligen förbereda stormningen av staden. Den 18 juli fällde över 2000 bombplan nära 8000 ton bomber över Caen. Det var det mest massiva och koncentrerade flyganfall i taktisk samverkan med marktrupper som dittills hade gjorts. Hade fallit, möttes de brittiska soldaterna av bombkratrar och ruiner. Halva staden var förstörd och 7000 av invånarna var döda eller sårade. Befolkning fick betala ett högt pris för stadens befrielse. Efter 7 veckor kunde utbrytningen börja. Amerikanerna bröt igenom i Avranches och spred sig sedan västerut och söderut in i Bretagne och österut mot Mortain och Argentan. Norrifrån avancerade britterna och kanadensarna mot Falaise i ett försök att täppa till den ficka som de tyska styrkorna var på väg att hamna i.
There were very great practical difficulties in this closing of the Falaise gap quickly. And it was difficult for the one side, British, Canadian, Polish, to appreciate the point of view of the other side, the Americans. We were coming down from the north, launched from the congested, bombed and difficult areas of the Caen sector. Secondly, the Germans facing us on that north side of the corridor they were trying to keep open for their escape were in areas where they had been fighting against us for 2 months or more. The Americans were coming up to meet us from the south in more open country and against much less prepared and organized German resistance.
Falaise skulle bli ett av invasionens blodigaste slagfält. Det var Montgomerys nästa mål. Hundratals allierade plan anföll fiendens kommunikationer och transporter. Den 6 augusti stod kanadensarna utanför Falaise. De gick in i staden den 16 augusti. Nu skilde bara en smal korridor de kanadensiska och amerikanska förtrupperna. Resterna av den tyska sjunde armén, ett 15-tal fältdivisioner, hade pressats in i en liten ficka. Till sist var tyskarna omringade. 10 000 dog. 50 000 togs till fånga. För tyskarna var Falaise en av de värsta katastroferna sedan Stalingrad. Antalet fångar visade hur svårt nedlaget var, men 40 000 tyskar lyckades komma undan och det förorsakade friktion mellan de allierade.
Had the British and Canadian forces been able to move faster, we might have trapped many more Germans in the Falaise pocket. Very little of their equipment got out, but quite a number of the Germans were able to escape toward the Seine River. And this was too bad. Perhaps the basic reason was that Britain had been in the war for much longer than we, and had taken very heavy casualties. And the Americans were fresh, and they had had practically no casualties in comparison. So while we were anxious to drive forward and were not too concerned about the casualties, as long as we could get our objectives, it was natural, I think, that the British and Canadian forces did it in a more orderly, pacing way. And perhaps this was part of Monty's characteristic and one of his drawbacks. In other words, that he never did quite drive the way the American commanders did. This was part of his nature, I guess. He was a more cautious man, combined with the fact that he couldn't afford the casualties that we could take if it was necessary to take them.
Falaise kallades för dödens fält. Drabbningen hade varit fruktansvärt blodig. Eisenhower besökte slagfältet och skrev: man hade kunnat gå hundratals meter i taget utan att trampa på något annat än döda kroppar. Den allierade huvudstyrkans framryckning skulle gå vid sidan om den franska huvudstaden. Parisarna, som hade levt i ockupationens natt i nära 4 år, vädrade morgonluft. När tyskarna började dra sig tillbaka gick motståndsrörelsen till öppet anfall. Efter allt förtryck och alla förödmjukelser gav parisarna utlopp för sitt uppdämda hat. ...1940 hade de sett Paris falla utan att ett enda skott hade avfyrats. Nu tog de igen det genom ett utbrott av våldsamheter vars like inte hade setts i Paris under hela kriget. Parisernas enda tanke var nu att utkräva hämnd på fienden, att göra upp gamla mellanhavaren. Morgonen hade kommit.